There's more than three, so if you can help us out with that research project, we'd love to hear from you. podcast@radiosurvivor.com.
You know, as a radio show, as community radio enthusiasts, you know that these platforms, like when I started the...
'Twas a dark, stormy night as a train rattled on. All the passengers had gone to bed, except a young man with a baby in his arms sat there with a bowed down head. The innocent one began crying just then, as though its poor heart would break. One angry man said, make that child stop its noise, for it's keeping all of us away.
This is At The Row. You're just in WGSC 9.7 FM. 8 Rare. Pastor Austin. Radio is the freight scene ever.
This is Rob Sapper, host of Overlooked, WGXE's excursion into underheard and overlooked music. Overlooked is now on fourth Tuesday of each month from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Each show is themed, connecting disparate types of music in new and uncharted ways. That's Overlooked, 12 to 2 on Tuesdays.
Name, Patty Boom. Host of Vinyl Freedom. Where? WGXC. When? Every first and third Tuesday from 12:10 to 2 p.m. What? Streaming online at WGXC.org. What? Tune in for a genre shakedown. All kinds of choice cuts of wax for you and yours to listen to. Dig it.
Now. Now, from Survival comes an economical do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Civil defense approved and easy to assemble. Takes just a weekend.
Get maximum protection from nuclear fallout for your family.
See a Survival shelter today.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Andrew of Chatham, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You know, I was listening to the radio, and I heard this thing.
90.7 FM, listener-aided and abetted radio.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Summer-like weather took over the Hudson Valley this past week with record high temperatures, brush fires, and air quality warnings. The temperature at Albany International Airport reached 88 degrees on April 13th, breaking the previous record of 87 degrees for that date set in 1977. Poughkeepsie also broke its high temperature record April 13th with 90 degrees reported there. The entire Hudson Valley was given a high fire danger rating from the Department of Environmental Conservation, and brush fires were reported in Orange County and Schoharie County. Forest Ranger Lieutenant Scott Jackson explained why conditions are ripe for fires, saying, and I quote, "The tree leaves aren't out yet, and green grass hasn't started growing, and the sunlight is hitting the ground directly. The dead grass and leaves are readily available to burn, especially when we have drier conditions like we are having this week with temperatures above normal," end quote. The annual prohibition on residential brush burning continues through May 14th. New York's Department of Environmental Conservation and Health also issued an air quality health advisory for much of the Hudson Valley on April 14th because of elevated levels of ozone. The good news for these weather problems is that rain is forecasted for the weekend and beginning of the week, which should lessen the heat, fire threat, and poor air quality. Thomas C. Zambito reports in the Poughkeepsie Journal that Holtec International now says it will delay the release of radioactive water from reactors at the shuttered Indian Point nuclear power plant into the Hudson River. Company had planned to release the first batch of 1 million gallons of radiological water into the Hudson River in May. Holtec spokesperson Patrick O'Brien released a statement that said, and I quote, "While Holtec notes that the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission has ultimate authority over radiological liquid releases at Indian Point and at other sites across the country, we hope this voluntary pause will be viewed positively as an indication of our willingness to work together with the state and with the surrounding community," end quote. Riverkeeper Legal Director Richard Webster emphasized that his group opposes any release of radioactive material into the Hudson River at any time, saying, and I quote, "If there is a way not to discharge this stuff into the river, let's do it," end quote. Read more about this story in the Poughkeepsie Journal. Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that Governor Kathy Hochul's new nominee to become New York's top judge, Rowan Wilson, faces the beginning of his confirmation hearing on April 17th. The State Senate Judiciary Committee asked questions of Hochul's second nominee after they rejected her first choice, Hector LaSalle. Wilson has received a far warmer reception from legislators in the State Senate than LaSalle did. If confirmed, Wilson would be the first black chief judge in New York history. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Representative Elise Stefanik has a form on her website for constituents to give her opinions on the 2023 Farm Bill. Stefanik said, and I quote, "Agriculture is the backbone of upstate New York and the North Country. As Congress is working to draft this year's farm bill, farmers across New York's 21st District can use this input form to directly share their priorities with me so I can bring them to the highest levels. End quote. Every 5 years, Congress passes a farm bill that affects a host of agricultural issues. Stefanik, who represents Rensselaer County and the rest of the 21st Congressional District, is not on the House Agricultural Committee, which drafts the farm bill. Mark Molinaro, the Republican representing the 19th Congressional District, is on the Agricultural Committee. And that wraps up the WGXE News Update. You can visit our website at WGXE.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXE sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
No Justins, no peace. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Tennessee calls itself the volunteer state, but don't volunteer your opinion there. Free speech is by no means guaranteed in Tennessee. This month, the largely white Tennessee House of Representatives, with its heavily gerrymandered Republican supermajority, expelled two members, Representatives Justin Jones and Justin Pearson, the two youngest black representatives in the House. They stood accused of breaching House decorum for nonviolently protesting the chamber's inaction on gun violence in the wake of yet another mass school shooting, this one at the Covenant School in Nashville on March 27th. 3 9-year-olds and 3 adults were killed by the single shooter armed with an AR-15-style semi-automatic assault rifle, a weapon of war. Days after the mass shooting, the 146th in the U.S. in 2023, according to the Gun Violence Archive, over 1,000 people marched on the Capitol, flooding the Senate and House galleries, chanting demands for gun control. During a House recess, Jones and Pearson went to the floor with a small bullhorn. They were joined by Democratic Representative Gloria Johnson, a former teacher. These elected officials were later dubbed the Tennessee Three. Infuriated, Republican House Speaker Cameron Sexton pledged to punish them. In a radio interview later, Sexton said the three were worse than the January 6 insurrectionists who stormed the U.S. Capitol in 2021. On Thursday, April 7th, the Tennessee House held 3 separate votes. The Republicans voted to expel the two Justins, Justin Jones and Justin Pearson, but failed to muster enough votes to purge Representative Gloria Johnson, who's white. When asked later why she thought she avoided expulsion, Johnson said,
"It might have to do with the color of our skin."
During the 6-hour expulsion proceedings, each of the targeted Democrats were questioned by their Republican accusers. Justin Pearson was admonished by Representative Andrew Farmer, whose tone, dripping with contempt, clearly echoed Tennessee's racist roots.
"That's why you're standing there, because of that temper tantrum that day, for that yearning to have attention. That's what you wanted, but you're getting it now."
Tennessee House Speaker Cameron Sexton drove the effort to expel the two black legislators. It was not his first confrontation with Justin Jones. In 2020, as a Black Lives Matter activist following the police killing of George Floyd, Justin Jones led the successful movement to remove the bust of Nathan Bedford Forrest from the state Capitol rotunda. Forrest, a Tennessean enslaver, plantation owner, and Confederate Army general, is revered by racist white Southerners. Forrest was accused of numerous atrocities and war crimes during the Civil War. He led the massacre at Fort Pillow, 40 miles north of Memphis, where Confederate forces are believed to have killed hundreds of unarmed Union troops after they'd surrendered. Forrest was also the first Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan, which was founded in Tennessee. Cameron Sexton voted against removing his sculpture. On Holocaust Remembrance Day, January 27, 2022, Sexton interrupted a floor speech by Democratic Representative John Ray Clemens, whose wife is Jewish. Clemens was criticizing a Tennessee county banning the Holocaust memoir Mouse by Art Spiegelman. Justin Jones has repeatedly called on House Speaker Cameron Sexton to resign. By most accounts, Sexton's campaign to purge the Tennessee Three has failed miserably. On Monday, just days after their expulsion, Justin Jones was unanimously reappointed by the Nashville City Council. On Wednesday, Justin Pearson rallied with supporters in Memphis in front of the historic Lorraine Motel. It was on the second-floor balcony of the Lorraine Motel where Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated on the afternoon of April 4, 1968, almost 55 years to the day that the Tennessee House expelled these two young black elected officials. After the Shelby County Commissioners voted unanimously to reappoint Pearson to the legislature, he spoke invoking King's words.
So the message for all the people in Nashville who decided to expel us. You can't expel hope. You can't expel justice. You can't expel our voice. And you sure can't expel our fight.
Yeah.
We look forward to continuing to fight, continuing to advocate until justice rolls down like water and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. Let's get back to work!
In 1892, a white mob burned the offices of the Memphis Free Speech and Headlight newspaper to the ground. In retaliation for the fearless anti-lynching reporting by the newspaper's co-owner, legendary black investigative journalist Ida B. Wells, almost 130 years later, Justin Jones wrote a book about his own political trajectory called The People's Plaza, about the protests in Nashville following the 2020 police killing of George Floyd. He opens the book with a quote of Ida B. Wells. She wrote, "The way to right wrongs is to turn the light of truth upon them." Well, in Nashville, the Tennessee Three are doing just that. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, there will be a slight chance of showers between noon and 2 p.m., then a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. It will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 75 degrees. Saturday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, with a temperature low of around 56 degrees. And on Sunday, a slight chance of showers, mostly cloudy, with a temperature high near 69 degrees. And Sunday night, a chance of showers after 2 a.m., it will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 54 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Adelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a 3-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many 3-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-212-7509 as they want, and WGXC will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number again to call in and record a 3-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Accra, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium.
Tune in to Transmission Art and Experimental Sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit mohican.com.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC, hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Barbara Moncure from the album Folk Songs of the Catskills. That was the Delhi Jail on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Next, we tune in the latest episode of the I Have Seen Niagara radio theater show from G. Lucas Crane and Rick Royer. The show airs Saturday mornings on the WGXC morning show between 9 and 10 a.m. and every early Wednesday night just after midnight.
Yeah, of course I like the Hard Rock Cafe. I am a party boy. I've always been a party boy. Let's fucking go!
That is Zach L. Keeball, party boy and reporter for Channel 9 Buffalo WZTV News. He's 6'2", clean, and hot. Likes fast movies, neon signs, and sinning. From wet t-shirts to wet pants, you might think, as he does, that he has seen it all and done it all. But he has never been to Niagara Falls. That changes tonight. He's been sent to neighboring Niagara to do a feature on the town's urban legends for Channel 9's annual Corny Halloween segment. He'll cover the well-known Niagara legends, of course, like the ghost of the chimp named Mark Twain, who was killed at a birthday party, who some say still haunts the third baseline of a Little League
mystery
park.
Of the lace mummy found at the bottom of the
cursed
gorge.
Entrees at Devil's Hole, Pizza and Ribs.
The cult of psychic water farmers,
who mysteriously vanished along with hundreds of others. But he's decided to arrive a night early, hit some bars, and get the real scoop on lesser-known stories from some salt-of-the-earth locals. He assumed that Niagara Falls would be bustling this Friday night, considering there was only one motel with any vacancy. He booked it online, a cheap place that didn't even have a name. But the streets are dead, pitch black, they didn't even bother turning on the streetlights. Further up the boulevard, he sees some lights, bulbs making a perfect circle.
It seems to be the only place open at midnight on a Friday in this little town. But it's exactly what he was looking for, a gritty-looking dive bar called the Wagon Wheel. He walks through saloon doors to a room as quiet as the empty streets. No music, no chatter, among the two sleepy customers and a giant bartender. He calls out to her for a strong beer, and she answers simply by pounding a bottle on the bar while opening it in one smooth gesture before he even finishes his sentence. Wow, okay, let's get this party started then, says Zach with a fist pump. To the jukebox he goes. It's all classic rock, but that's all right by him. Oh yeah, Aerosmith. He picks his favorite tune, but when the music starts, it's not Aerosmith at all. Oh, that jukebox is broken, the bartender says. No matter what you choose, it's just gonna be Randy Newman. He sits down next to the drunkest of the clientele. Drinks on me tonight, Zach says, slaps a $5 bill on the table. As long as you can tell me some of the spookiest stories about Niagara Falls. I'm talking macabre, mysterious, and magical. There's an uninterested silence. Then the fellow next to him speaks up in a half burp.
You want to see something magical?
He asks El Kibaw to write a card on a cocktail napkin and place it upside down on the bar. Zach obliges with a grin, with the two of clubs. The guy begins saying some magic words, but is brought to an abrupt stop by some internal churning. He rears back in anguish, then vomits all over the bar. He fans the vomit out in front of himself with two hands, while some of it hangs down from his lip. From the bottom of the pile of chunks, he pulls out a playing card, the two of clubs.
Is this your friggin' card?
Yes, it is my card, but how did you do that? Zach answers. But the drunk just stares ahead. He starts to chew on something he found in his mouth, then slowly falls asleep, while still holding the card up, letting it droop down from pinched fingers, dangling like an au jus-drenched slice of thin roast beef. From the corner of the bar, the other patron chimes in. Ah, don't pay any attention to him, he's drunk. You want the real story? I got one for you. He shuffles over a few seats and sits uncomfortably close to a reporter. It's the story of a newsman from Buffalo, he says, who came to Niagara Falls not too long ago. Handsome fella. Oh, yeah. He was staying at the Cascade Motel, room 33, when he was visited by the ghost of Nikola Tesla, who took the shape of a beautiful red-headed lady. They made sweet love in the woods. And then she sold him an hourglass that flows in only one direction. Once you turn it over, the sand trickles down. And if you survive its hour and turn it to the other side, the sand flows no more. Time stops for you, and you can be a party boy forever. He starts rubbing Zach's thigh with one hand. And with the other, he pulls a gold coin from behind Zach's ear. Hold on to this, baby. You might need it. Zach squirms away and escapes to the bathroom. He locks himself in a stall. The deep breath he takes to regain his composure collects a lungful of foul air. Across from him, there's a sign on the tank of the toilet. Cleveland Browns parking only. It has a cartoon of a buffalo violently ejecting a turd wearing a Cleveland Browns jersey.
A turd in a Browns jersey?
But something seemed wrong about it. The turd is covered in blood, crying, and the buffalo was grotesquely anatomically correct and has red glowing eyes that follow him around the room. Fearfully, he diverts his glance, which falls on the dozens of lewd photographs from erotic magician magazines from the 80s, which are glued on the inside of the stall door.
He's like, I gotta get the hell out of here.
But back in the bar, the scene has changed dramatically. Party mode. Loaded. All three wagon wheelers are naked, oiled up, and pierced. They rush at him with penetrating eyes and fingers, laughing and gnashing their teeth. He peels himself away from their greasy claws and nearly makes it to the door before the bartender calls to him.
But wait, you can't leave without these.
She jangles his keys, which somehow made it from his jacket pocket to her hand.
Hey, how did you get those? He lunges for them, and the bartender grabs him by the back of the head and presses his face deep into the gully of her cleavage. She whispers in his ear.
You're a legend in this town, party boy. You just don't know it yet.
And then releases him from her damp, weathered breasts. He collapses to the ground. She jumps on the bar, takes off her leather boot, and pulls an owl from it, which flaps madly around the saloon. They all scream and clap like maniacs as he springs to his feet. You're just a bunch of crazed, horny magicians, he shouts over the blasting sounds of Randy Newman. He sprints out the door and drives his Mazda Miata as fast as he can to the address of the motel he booked. Indeed, the nameless motel has no name on its sign. Just illuminated plastic in the shape of a sign. It looks like it's been closed for decades. Not only is there nobody at the front desk, there is no front desk. Instead, there's a large brass machine with gears and pulleys and glass chambers protruding from the wall. On it, there's a sign. Insert gold coin for room key. Gold coin, he asks himself. Then presses his hand to his jacket pocket, remembering the gold coin pulled from his ear by the lecherous wizard. He inserts the coin into the slot, and out comes a shiny silver key with a plastic keychain that says, Cascade Motel, Room 33. Just then, the antique spiral filament light bulb flickers, and Zack stares at the ceiling in a trance, as words from the wagon wheel echo in his mind. Party boy. Forever.
Most radio shows don't come with a demonstration, but most radio shows aren't Radio Wonderland.
Greatest hits.
Right, so then I take more pieces of live radio, slice them, fit them into the groove, and then in a few minutes you get something like...
In LA, some restrictions apply.
It's radio made completely out of radio. I'm Joshua, but you just call me Radio Wonderland.
10:30 a.m. Saturday mornings till 11. Some restrictions
apply. Now joining us via Zoom is Margaret Nowak, the curator of the Douglas Davis Interactions Selected Works 1970 to 1980 exhibition that is opening April 15th. It's a joint exhibition of the Create Council and the Arts in Catskill and the Hudson Opera House, Hudson Hall in Hudson. Margaret, are you there?
I am here. Thank you, Tom. I'm so happy to be here.
We are happy to have you joining us today.
Thank you.
So introduce us to who Douglas Davis is. And I guess there's a detailed, I don't know how many degrees of separation that got your involvement.
Oh, my gosh. It's not that many degrees, but Douglas Davis was, he died in 2014, so he's no longer with us. But he was a digital media artist. So he was a happenings artist in the 1960s. And so that was very much conceptual art, and it was happening, hence the name. So it's very much sort of ephemeral. It goes away. It's just a memory. He started to be interested or to become interested in video in the 1970s, and then sort of did happenings on film. And so he was a real pioneer. I feel very strongly for him now that I know his work better. I'm no expert on him, but he's a really interesting and very strong character. He worked with Joseph Beuys, who was another conceptual artist who a lot of people know. He's probably the most famous of this trio that I'll name. So Joseph Beuys, Nam June Paik, which is another famous name, and especially in video art, and there was Douglas Davis. And Douglas Davis, for some reason, just fell out of the group. I'm not sure why. And all of his things, he was staying in a very famous building in Soho, 80 Worcester Street, which was the sort of birthplace of Fluxus, the Fluxist art movement, which he participated in. I wouldn't say he was a Fluxist, but he did run in those circles. And when he died in 2014, he was in a basement apartment there. So he had been on the third floor and he had went down to the basement. All of his files, all of his works, he did prints, he did photography, he did all of his videos, all the master copies were all in this basement apartment at 80 Worcester Street. And they were moved to a relative's house in Woodstock. And from then on, they were just completely abandoned. It was open to the elements. And so this is where I step in. I found out about this collection through relatives because I happened to be close to the family. And they said, why don't you just go get this stuff and do something with it? You know, try to see if there's an interest in an institution taking the whole collection. And so I did. I literally went and got it. I rented a U-Haul and I went to this place in Woodstock, completely abandoned house. The house is lit, really falling in. The ceiling was falling in. The floor was falling in. And it was all his work was in one bedroom to the ceiling. And I took it all out and with permission of the family and set it all up on the second floor of Catskill, of the Council on the Arts, Catskill. It's where I live. I live in the village of Catskill. And I rented the second floor and spread it all out. And since then, it was October of 2022 that I started this project. And since then, I have had some pretty interesting luminaries from the museum world come in and see the work and see the collection and see the file boxes full of the process that Douglas Davis took to create these video works that were so interesting at the time. They're anyway, so I feel like I'm rambling on, but do you have any questions for me at this point? I'm gonna stop, but
it's a good story. I mean, we've all driven around the Catskills and you pass by those houses with the roofs collapsing in and the doors open and the windows broken, and you never wonder that there might be such treasure inside.
Yes, that's exactly right. And this was a known entity because it was a house on a property of a cousin of my partner, Brad. And it was actually Brad who suggested that I, you know, go for it. So it was it's been an amazing journey learning about, because my background is in historic preservation, very, very far from video art of the 1970s. But I have gotten very interested in this man who, with Nam June Paik and Joseph Beuys, they were sort of prophetic. I hope that's a word. They were really interested in communication, immediate communication via telecast. That's how it was back then. And so they were sort of the precursor of the internet. They were very interested in how this would work. And Douglas Davis, particularly, he was, interested in video because it wasn't a memory, it wasn't a happening, it wasn't conceptual art. He could do it on video, he wouldn't edit his videos, and he really enjoyed the idea. He was on. It was like he was in front of a live audience. And then he got into using television, and he would do broadcasts of television with this incredible idea that it was a two-way, that one day television would be a two-way medium. He had no idea, of course, about cell phones, that we would be constantly in contact with each other. He would be astounded right now if he were alive. But he was very, just very forward-thinking. And the exhibits are his work, his flat works, as they're called. You know, they're all things that he print. He did a lot of prints. He did a lot of what we call like body painting. You know, he would step on his prints. And so you see a lot of Douglas Davis's feet and his hands. You know, he was very much interested in that. But he was, there will be performances at each venue, video recorded performances that are original. So some of them have never been seen. And so it's very exciting. Or they were seen once and never seen again. But the exhibitions are just sort of to shed light on this really interesting character in the art world. And he does have collections. He does have holdings at the Whitney. He has holdings at the Guggenheim, at MoMA, in Houston. So he is an important person, but he just sort of fell off. And I don't really know why, but I'm trying to sort of get some interest, you know, gin up some interest for this character and show people that he was so forward thinking and such a pioneer. And these shows will be simultaneous. I think you would really enjoy that one is in Hudson and one is across the river in Catskill. And they do show different works. I do have one work that's a particular favorite. He, right during the middle of the Cold War with the USSR at the time, but with Russia, in 1976, he did a telecast with Alexander Melamed and Vitaly Komar, two famous Russian artists at the time, and they were conceptual artists. They did everything sort of happenings-wise. And he did a series of photographs where there was a black line in the gallery where they were, in the gallery where he was, and it was a series of questions. And they were both holding these boards that said, why is there a line between us? What is this line between us? You know, what does this mean? And it was just like, I'm so taken by this person, and I'm really excited about the shows. And I'm, sorry, there I go again. Blah blah blah. So,
well,
tell us
when did the shows start? April 15th, and how long do they run?
They run until May 28th, and I did get the address. So, if anyone is, I mean, Hudson Hall is one of the, as a historic preservationist, it is a stunning restoration. So if you're into historic buildings, just go for that. But you will enjoy the Douglas Davis show. It is located at 327 Warren Street in Hudson. And there is an opening reception there. It comes after the one at Create in Catskill, which is at 398 Main Street in Catskill. And it's a great gallery. It's a great spot. But their reception will be 4 to 6. Hudson Hall will be 6 to 8. And then it will run until May 28th. But then I have a very exciting guest speaker coming, and it's David Ross, who was the director of the Whitney, the director of the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, the director of the Institute of Contemporary Art in Boston, and currently is the chair of the fine arts. He has a very long title and I can't think of it, but he is a chair of a department at the School of Visual Arts in New York City. So he's a really important person, and he knew Douglas Davis personally and vouched for his work. And so he's going to be speaking at Hudson Hall on the 21st of April at 6 p.m. And so I really encourage anyone who has any interest in art, conceptual art, anything. This man is a dynamo, and he's just plain speaking, but so sharp. And so I encourage anyone who has, as I said, any interest in really anything in to do with art to please come. And it's free, by the way. All of this is free. So there's no reason not to come.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Margaret Nowak, the curator of the Douglas Davis show that's called Interaction Selected Works 1970 through 1980 that opens April 15th at the Hudson Hall and the Create Council on the Arts in Catskill and Hudson, respectively. I wanted to ask about two different, before
sure.
we go, I understand he, Davis, created one of the first ever, if not maybe the first ever, artworks involving satellite transmissions.
Yeah, well, it was actually one of the first on, well, there were two things. Satellite transmission, he did a satellite work with Nam June Paik and Joseph Beuys at Documenta 6 in 1977 in Kassel, Germany. And it was unbelievable. And we're going to show that performance. It's called The Last 9 Minutes because it was the last 9 minutes of the video hour. And so that was a seminal work. That was a one-time thing that had never been, it broadcast to 28 countries. So it was a kind of amazing thing. But what he did in the 90s, and I don't cover this necessarily because my cutoff is sort of the 80s, but he created one of the first artworks that was on the internet.
That was my next question. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The world's longest collaborative sentence. And it is now owned by the Whitney Museum of American Art. And you can log into it. I will have a QR code available at each exhibition so you can log on to it and continue the world's longest collaborative sentence. But this was Douglas Davis. And the Whitney acquired this work in 1995. And it has still gone on. There's still people adding on to this sentence. So he's still with us. It's an amazing guy. Really incredible person, and I'm so proud to be representing him.
And this is the sort of, I mean, this is has ripple. This show will have ripples internationally in the art world, and it's sort of a thing that doesn't happen in the Hudson Valley all that often.
I think not. No, I think it's the Hudson Hall group was very excited to host. To host this, and of course Create was excited, but it is unusual. He was a New Yorker, although he was born in DC, he lived most of his life in New York City, but it's he's got relatives spread all over upstate, all over the Woodstock area and in Ulster County. But so I think it's a really interesting thing that you wouldn't see every day, and it has direct relevance to today's world, especially with AI. He would just be, his mind would be blown with artificial intelligence and what's happening now. But he was on it. He was on the cusp of just trying to get people. He said in an interview, he said, imagine a world where people are communicating every second, you know, with each other, he was thinking television as a two-way medium. But now, of course, we're on our cell phones all the time. And he just, he knew this was coming. I guess a lot of people did, but he's an artist. You know, it's such an interesting combination. It's a fascinating character.
All right, we've been speaking with Margaret Nowak, the curator of the Douglas Davis Interaction Selected Works 1972-1980 show. Opens April 15th at the Create Council of the Arts in Catskill in the Hudson Hall in Hudson. Tell us about the talk again.
Oh yeah, so on April 21st, and I really encourage you to come, it's free. David Ross, from most known for his Whitney biennials, he was cutting edge with those shows. He will be speaking on Douglas Davis and the whole Fluxus movement and conceptual art at 6 p.m. at Hudson Hall, April 21st, and it's free. So there's no reason you shouldn't come.
and the two shows both have openings, you said, on April 15th?
That's correct. Yep. And there will be a closing reception at Create on the 28th of May. But just keep an eye out for that. Ask about it if you come to the show. But the openings will be on the 15th. They will occur right after each other. Create is first. Hudson Hall is the grand finale on that evening. Until 8 p.m.
All right. Anything else that we forgot to mention or you want to mention?
I don't think so. I think I pretty much rambled on, but no, I'm very excited. I'm very hopeful that your audience will come in droves to come and see this. It's very important.
All right. Well, thank you for telling us all about it, and we'll see you out there April 15th at either Create Catskill or Hudson Hall.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks, Tom. Thanks for the interview. Thanks for the time.
All right. Thank you.
You got to try something.
You got a job at the radio station?
Oh, great. That place. It's dark and dirty and has, like, what, those three weirdos who work there?
At the Wave Farm, we are listening into the animals and the atmosphere. Sounds like we have crickets and Hondas. In the near 80 degree weather today, I saw a first garden snake warming itself in the sunny part of a forest path. But as you can hear, there is all sorts of animal activity at Wave Farm now. Listening to Zach Paul's Pond Station with hydrophones in the bottom of the Wave Farm pond. Quintron's weather warlock turning the sensing of precipitation, sunlight, wind, and temperature, the changes in those, into sound. It's also Quintron's traffic sacks beaming in the sounds from Route 23 in Acre. Also the test site for Acoustic Commons. Open microphone in the woods at Wave Farm. The solar radio project is also included in our soundscape, as is the Here Goes Radio Telescope. Each of these web streams is available separately or together online at wavefarm.org/listen or wgxc.org/listen, or click on the listen button on any Wave Farm or WGXC webpage.
That was Claverick from Sebado's Eric Gaffney, who lives in Western Massachusetts, but apparently spends time in Columbia County.
This is a song called The Ever-Improving Village. And Pepto-Bismol sunset tips aslant and seeps into the water table like a sewage treatment plant. A bus box swings and screeches on which feral children play. Their hollers strain through chain-link fences all the mean dog day. Left at Colonial Drug, the local den of sin.
kitty corner across the street from the horse and buggy motor inn. A crooked mile past Murderer's Creek, just north of Indian Head Hill, lies our ever-improving village on the banks of Thornbush Kill. The powers that be won't likely vote for doing something rash, like plow the streets or fill in potholes or pick up household trash. They raise the ban shell for being an attractive nuisance, so they say. Then they tore down the public library for being old and in the way. They put a wub mart up, invoking eminent domain, in hopes it will kill off the local business that remains. Yet once there was an ordinance that you couldn't build no higher the statue of William Penknife or the Second Parish Spire. Things aren't so bad, they're getting better. We're not so bad, we're getting better. Things aren't so bad, they're getting better. We're not so bad, we're getting better. Instead of loitering round the liquor store, the wayward youth will enter our state-of-the-art brand spanking new juvenile detention center. Get your kicks at the 5 and 10 or the 12-lane polydrome. The ace of burgers, the rummage roost, or the gloaming old folks' home. We've got the county's largest junkyard, which truly does deserve to be declared an accidental wildlife preserve. In spite of all you've heard about the underground oil spillage, you've got to admit we've got a heck of a view from our ever-improving village. We're not so bad, we're getting better in our ever-improving village.
Next, here is a recording from the band Stars Like Fleas from their 2008 album Early Riser. It was recorded live at Wave Farm. See if you can hear the Green County Birds singing along.